Welcome to In His Footsteps with award-winning author Margaret Agard, sharing practical tips for living a joy-filled life and amazing interviews with people who do. Now here's Margaret.
Today, we'll be talking more about how service is the secret to success. And an unusual experience by Myra Dolan, where she shares with us how God promised she could have what she was praying for, but only if she used it to bless others.
Now here's this week's Bible question and answer, sponsored by the Amazing Bible Timeline. It's the Bible as you've never understood it before. Use this color-coded wall poster to see all the events and people of the Bible in order. You'll learn exciting new facts that can't be seen in any other way. That the prophet Daniel and the Chinese philosopher Confucius lived in the same century. Or that Noah's son Shem lived until the prophet Abraham was 150 years old. It's a necessary tool for the true student or teacher of the Bible. Bible and world history all in one place. Find out more at AmazingBibleTimeline.com.
This week's Bible question is from Mike Schimmel. Do we have to give up everything to follow Christ? Why would he ask that? What is the original Greek meaning of Luke 14:33? Mike asked. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. On the surface, says Mike, it seems too extreme. If everything means everything, then we're left for nothing. For example, we would be naked. Is that the literal translation of the verse? Any and all information would be much appreciated. Well, as usual, you cannot take just a few words of the Bible out of context. You can see that what he meant, Christ was telling us we must be willing to sacrifice all that we have, if need be, in order to follow him. Not that we must give it up, but that if asked, we would give it up. We would walk the extra mile, give our coat to someone in need, stop playing video games or posting on MySpace and Facebook and go out and help our family members or neighbors, or share our food with the hungry. It begins by pointing out that before embarking on any undertaking, we start by looking at the cost. And then Christ tells us what the cost is. The cost of being a disciple of Christ is to be willing to submit our will to his and to share all that we have as needed. Today, we'll be continuing to talk about how service is the secret to success. Myra Dolan had a twist on that I found really unusual, and I had to look back through my life and say, has this ever happened to me? I shared with you how service can be a secret to success in our careers by sharing the story about my son-in-law who lost his job in a dying industry. But because he'd taken the time to write articles in industry magazines sharing how he had solved problems, he was offered another job within a week at a better pay. And I shared with you how my husband Parker went out and was just helping other people and didn't have time to work on our own garden because of everything he was doing. And what he really wanted was manure for our 2,000 square foot greenhouse. And about a week and a half of not being able to work in our garden because of that, all of a sudden, some people showed up with a huge, I'm talking huge, like double long monster truck of manure. It was a mountain of manure in our front yard because he served, and God loves to bless his servants. Today, we'll be talking with Myra Dolan, who wanted to learn a new thing. Maybe you're praying for something. Maybe you're praying for the ability to learn a new talent or a new job or whatever it is you're praying for. And God said to her in her heart, you can have it, but only if you're going to use it to bless other people. Here's what happened. Parts of Charleston is a food desert. No, it isn't that people don't want to get fresh vegetables. It's that there are no grocery stores, and the only places they can go to are places like a Go-Mart or some place that will have apples for a dollar an apple. No lettuce.
You're correct.
Okay. So how did you get involved with the soup kitchen?
Well, since this airs on Sunday, I'll give you the Sunday version. This is true. It started because I felt like I didn't want to leave this life without learning to garden. And so I personally said a prayer And it's one of those, you know, you're heard and you receive an answer kind of things. Yes, you know, I'll help you to do this project because I live on the side of a hill with forest. There's no way I can garden anything. It's dark with the trees, the shade, and the hard soil. So I knew I couldn't do anything here, never have been able to. So it was answered. I knew I had that answer. And the answer was, you know, I would receive the help, but I would have to bless others with this project. So I had to go find someone to start a garden with. And I tried, you know, a couple of different places, and then I knew I had
to
affiliate.
So what you did was you got an answer, and it was you're going to have to bless others, and you went out looking for the ways to bless. Is that right?
Yes, I had to go find someone who wanted a garden.
And and it didn't all work out.
Well, I went to the East End Main Street folks and couldn't seem to. I just hit a dead place there. And then I thought, well, I'll call the soup kitchen and see, you know, their inner city. Hadn't really planned this all out real well, but I just gave a call over. I didn't know the director. And I said, hi, I'm Myra. And would you like to start a garden for the soup kitchen? And she said, yes. It was like this was meant to be. So we put our heads together. Didn't happen overnight. It was still, we had our eye on a piece of adjacent land.
Adjacent to
Manimal's Soup Kitchen in downtown Charleston.
Okay.
And that little piece is what we wanted. Well, it took us a year to realize we were not going to get that. So we had to say another little prayer, and one of the volunteers, well, he wasn't a volunteer up until that moment, brought in all the eggs that his chickens had laid, boxes of eggs, which was unusual, I guess. And then one of the, I think she's the head cook at that time, asked him if he had any garden space, and he said, why, yes. And so the head cook directed him to me, who I was there volunteering at the time, and we got to know him, went to his house, saw the garden space. Yes, oh, we were quite welcome to come in as a soup kitchen and start the garden. Well, he had a tractor. This is actually a small farm.
When did this happen? How many years ago was this?
This is 3 years ago.
Okay, so about 4 years ago, you had the prompting that you prayed that you could learn to garden, and you got an answer, yes, and then it was, but you have to bless someone else.
You have to bless, yes. It wasn't about me at all. Okay. I would get to learn to garden. That was my part.
Okay.
Not that it would be for me. It was never for me or about me, but and eventually I would be called to bring that home and teach, you know, people at church.
Okay. So your first step was to just get out there and try to find someone who wanted that help. And that wasn't necessarily plopped down in your lap. You had to do some work. And then
I had to work.
And then you went and found someone who did want it. And you spent a year trying to get it started on one piece of land. And when you had, let's say, exhausted all that effort and realized that was going to fail, another prayer, and along comes a chicken farmer.
Right.
With the garden.
Too many eggs. And a farm. And a willing heart. And he's been perfect. And we've been on his property. It is private property, about 10 minutes from the soup kitchen. But it is rural. It's out in the country. And it's perfect. And he's been supportive. He's our best volunteer as far as all the garden goes, and while we've had a wonderful association, and that was just the beginning. Every year that we start, we'll be beginning our fourth year of the garden, but we always include at the beginning of the year a blessing on the garden, and so we don't forget where it came from. We always
Good.
Give thanks.
How did you get people to help? How did you get the word out?
Okay, well, Manimal was a soup kitchen. It's entering its 33rd year, I believe, of operation, and there was a pretty great volunteer base at that point. We were getting it all online, and so we had collecting email addresses, going out to meet different people at different events and get email addresses too.
Well, what kind of event? Give me an example.
We went to the Sustainability Fair. We were part of that for 3 years, and that's something in downtown Charleston. We started some of our own events. We've at Capital Market downtown, we started the old-fashioned bean stringing, and that way we network with, well, people come in from all over the country, actually. We've met them from as far away as California there at that event.
What's the old-fashioned bean stringing?
Well, that was something I had read in my journal of an ancestor, and that was something the community did. They weren't allowed to go to dances or do anything. Everything sort of centered in the community, and it was centered around maybe making apple butter or molasses or the bean stringing.
So oh, you mean like when you pull the strings out of string beans?
Yes.
Oh, so you just sit there doing the grunt work for...
Yeah.
Getting your string beans ready to can. Okay.
Well, the theme is buy a pound, donate a pound, and sit down with us and string a pound. Now, if you've not had a string bean, you wouldn't know. Or snap a bean. Maybe that makes more sense to folks who don't eat string beans. But those are real. They're real. The common favorite here.
I have done plenty of those. In fact, that's why I hated canning, was the thought of coming home when I was in grade school and having to sit down and string a bunch of beans instead of going out and play. But I like it now, and usually we sit down and watch a movie. But why would someone come from California to do that?
Oh, they were at this. This is a big farmer's market downtown Charleston, and it offers unique products and foods. And then all the farmers come in the summer and to set up outside. So it draws people from all over. And when they come home to visit, they're there. So we actually use that as a fundraiser and a networking tool to meet folks in the community and let them know what we're doing. And we invite them to grow a row of produce if they garden and donate it to the soup kitchen as well. We also involve our master gardeners. That is through the extension service here. We are a project that has been accepted for credit. So when someone goes through the master gardener training and has graduated as a master gardener volunteer, they have 30 hours of volunteer service to give somewhere. And our garden space is actually a small working farm at this stage. And they can come and learn how to grow produce. Last year we had an expert come out and teach how to build or how to weave trellises in the garden and, just different things. We are experimenting with lasagna gardening this year.
That's the layer approach of your mulching.
Compost layering, and we had never used a big space for that. We did composting 1 year in earnest, but this year it is on the ground. So we are
doing that. Now, Myra, one of the things you said was the real problem at first was getting consistent volunteers. So I hear two ways of solving that. Go ahead.
That's correct. Well, we had that base, that volunteer base for the soup kitchen. So we had email addresses, and we just sent out the message that we needed gardeners. Well, you're going to only appeal to a very small percentage of your volunteer base that wanted to come and maybe give food out in the soup line or something like that. But we did glean, a nice list of volunteers, probably, 50, 60 people at that point. Master gardeners would have supplied another great number, but as word got out, as the garden grew and the effort grew, the newspaper gave us lots of media attention. They are on our email list. We let them know what we're doing at every step of the way, so they often put us in the paper or feature us in pictures.
This is people then are aware of you so that people who want to can. And the second idea, like Master Gardener is great because some people want to become Master Gardeners. And that does take an effort to get that designation. And the second way that you say is for some communities, it might be difficult because of how people are spread out, to start a community garden where people would have to come in. I'm thinking of, say, Little Birch out in our area, where they have a good, not maybe soup kitchen, but certainly food bank. And the idea that people could just designate a row.
Right. Well, what I would do in a smaller community, if you don't, you need a real good core group of at least 5 to 10 people who will stay with it and promise to stay with it the full year. You can do it with that. Or you can encourage those who do garden, whether it be through fruit trees, brambles, you know, berries,
yes,
or whether they have vegetable gardens, to grow a row for that soup kitchen and to donate it. That's what I would do in a smaller community, probably.
Or tithe it. You know, we're always trying,
yeah,
to figure out, well, how much do you think we saved on our food bill with our garden this year? And maybe we should tithe that. But this is a good way to tithe it.
It is. The,
yes,
first fruits of your garden are a wonderful way to tithe. I agree. That's a great idea.
Myra, how has that impacted the Manna Soup Kitchen and the people who come?
With all of, for the people, or
yes,
the soup kitchen in general?
The people.
The people. Well, we have brought fresh produce to people who are in the food desert. When we grow too much, or we bring in, overload the kitchen with excess that they can't process, it's put out for people who come in, and there are over 400 people a day that come to the soup kitchen, and that's open 7 days a week. And they get to take it home. We share it, and then if we have too much cooked, which we have done in the past, or really have a lot of excess, we can share it with the other agencies in town that take care of feeding hungry in shelter situations. That's happened. And when we have sufficient volunteers, we clean and freeze our food, our excess, and we're still using the product. I think we're about halfway through what we froze last year. We froze green beans from our bean stringing. We had over 500 pounds of beans that we processed and froze from that event. We used that also as a fundraiser.
How did you do that?
We actually did a raffle.
Oh, okay.
Some people don't do those, but that's what we did, and we raised about $1,200 with our raffle at that event. And then we sell flowers if we have them. That is always a wonderful way to raise funds for a soup kitchen.
Where do you sell the flowers? At that farmer's market in Charleston?
Actually, the little church where the soup kitchen is housed, they lease their kitchen. We sell it to those folks that come out of church on Sunday. So we're in there at the garden. We cut the flowers fresh on Saturday morning, and then there's a lady who likes to design flowers. And we just use old jars and vases, whatever we can find, put them together, and then ask a donation. And as those people leave church on Sunday, they'll leave a little donation for the soup kitchen and take a vase of flowers. And they bring the vase back the next week, and there we go.
That's nice.
It's sustainable, and it is, constantly brings us the money we need to buy the small things to keep the garden going.
Myra, how do you find time to do this? You work full-time, right?
Yes.
And you have children, grandchildren?
Their children are grown. Yes, they're grown. So it probably takes, in the summer is when it's busy, probably 3 hours on a Saturday is all it takes for me personally. It's a big, complex organization. You know, they have staff in the soup kitchen that handles everything on that end. I'm just on the garden end, and then we do the fundraisers, so I'm on that end as well. But I would say I've had at least, I didn't add them up, 100 and some, maybe 200 hours, who knows, last year of pretty intense work throughout the year. But we start gardening in March, and we didn't finish until mid-December this past year.
Or were you gardening in December?
We were still harvesting our coal crops.
Oh, you know, because it was such a mild winter. That's true.
It was.
We are too. We're still getting greens out of our garden.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we didn't put any hoops over it or anything. It's just still coming up.
Yes, I think we're in a different zone now. So I'm hearing it's the USDA. Is that who decides the growing zones?
Yes.
That has moved a bit. And, they've given us a little more growing time.
How did it feel to take your passion for learning gardening and turning it into making a difference here? What did you learn from it?
Oh, I'm still learning. I've learned to garden. And now I've been called, reeled in a little bit to bring it in and try to teach folks at church, I believe, to share a lot of things I've learned. We've networked with the community extensively, Gene and I, and we've just made so many friends. It's just unbelievable the good that's come from it. It's far more than growing vegetables. We've helped grow the community, and at least our immediate community, and realize how small it really is here in Charleston. I think we've blessed a lot of lives. Our work has been mentioned across the country. It's brought in people from other states who want to come and see the garden. People came from Japan to do a documentary on the soup kitchen, if you can believe that. It's helping bless others. I don't know what else to say. Even the silly little bean stringing, you know, the lady from California was telling you about, took pictures and took them back. It's hard to tell. We don't know
who else is blessed,
who it's changed, or what they've done with it. But I know that I was on a broadcast and I gave away all of our ideas to folks all over the country about a month ago through the American Community Gardening Association. They were doing a webinar, and this was community gardeners from all over the country, and I was just sharing our fundraising ideas. That was my little part of it, because we do so many. But in doing that, we're growing a community. I feel that very strongly. That's more unified.
And you're talking about this area around Charleston, that you're creating these connections. Okay.
Yeah.
And so anything you haven't said yet that you'd like to say?
It's just been a real blessing. I think anybody can do it. You just start small with a prayer, and if the Lord decides he's going to open the doors for you, he will do it. And it was one of those things that...
And the next thing you know, you're the star of a documentary in Japan.
we're shucking the corn in Japan.
That's right.
That's what I was doing. But it's amazing. We have, through the garden, gotten invited to all kinds of things. She has gotten to go to this Tech.
Virginia Tech. Yeah.
And they just broke out thousands of people, and they broke out into little groups to talk about problems in West Virginia with community gardening. Now, I asked Jean that, what she learned. She said she was in a little group, and they talked about all the deer in West Virginia just decimating everybody's efforts to garden.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yep.
We put a
big fence around ours, that's for sure. And fencing isn't cheap. Well, ours looks pretty cheap.
Well,
I'm not real fond of those pie plans hanging off the fence, but whatever works.
Well, we all kind of laugh. Even we've just met all kinds of people that have a passion. We've got,
the idea that you stayed in touch with the journalists and the other media people, because that is the kind of thing people like to write stories about, and it's a gift to them, and it's a gift to you to get the word out that way. So.
And we blog. Oh, I should have said that. Go to manameal.com. We blog everything we do with our garden. And so if anybody wants to see what we've done or how we've raised funds and just some of the events, we've got 2 years of blog on there, I think.
Look at this. People down there harvesting on November 19th. Oh, I just hate that, because Bill's supposed to work on remodeling our house when he's not gardening, and I hate when the gardening starts in March and goes till December, because then there's no time to work, because in January and February we must be buying seeds. Okay. That's right.
And then we just learned that, which is interesting for those on food stamps, that you can purchase garden plants and seeds with your food stamps. And that is a great way to extend what little you're given.
Yes.
It might buy you one can of beans, but you plant beans, you have a whole summer of beans. So if you make the Lord your partner, you got it made.
Well, that's an interesting twist on service and how God will bless us if we'll bless other people. One last story I want to share with you from my second book, In His Footsteps, Becoming One with Parker. Parker and I were getting ready to sell everything we had to go serve as missionaries. And we were in the process of doing a couple of things to fix the house up so that it would pass inspection. It was hard work, and we were under the gun. We had to be out by a certain date. And we had one project that was going to take us about a week, and then another project that we also thought would take at least 3 to 4 days. No one could help us with it, and we could not think of a simpler way to do the project than we were doing it, or a faster way to do it. I can't tell you what the second project was, but I can tell you that while we were in the middle of this, the phone rang one day, and I had to drop everything we were doing, run as fast as I could to the phone, and when I picked it up, I heard a voice on the other end say, "Will you take my elderly father to his doctor appointment tomorrow, because for some reason I can't do it?" And I thought, you know what? Immediately I knew. This elderly man lived an hour from my house in one direction, and the doctor was nearly an hour in the other direction. So just to go pick him up, get him in the car, which would take 15 minutes, come back to my house and go past it to the doctor was going to take three and a half hours, plus the time at the doctor, plus the time to get the person back. So there we're already looking at a full day, at least 8 hours. And all I could think was, we don't have time for that. And so I was like, yes, because I know service is the secret to success. And sure enough, it went exactly as I thought. 3 hours and a half after I left my house, I had him at the doctor's. And then, of course, we're sitting waiting because doctors never do have you in on time. He finally went back in for his appointment, and I started just looking through those women's magazines. And one of them had a story in it about a couple who were doing the exact same project we were. And they had come up with a way to solve the problem that only would take a day. So here we thought it would take us 3 to 4 days, and instead, using their method, we'd be able to do it in a day or less. I gave up a day of my time. God gave me back three. That is the way it works. Service is the secret to success. Service is the secret to success in your career, in relationships, when you have a problem to solve like I did, when you want to develop a new talent like Myra did. We are blessed in, by, through, and because of our service. Drop on by the website and share your stories of how service has been the secret to success in your life. I'd love to hear them.
You can find out more about how to have the joy that comes from living each day for God while still keeping up with daily life in the book, In His Footsteps, How to Be Happy in Every Situation, available at the website inhisfootsteps.com or online at amazon.com.
You can get more information on our guests and our discussion today, including replays of this show, at inhisfootsteps.com. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Margaret Agard. You can reach me at P.O. Box 173, Duckwest, Virginia 25063, or through my website, inhisfootsteps.com. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Be sure to join us next week for more practical tips on living a God-directed life and amazing interviews with people who do.